Good morning, welcome to Rabbi Sacks' Sunday morning shiur. This morning the topic is Tefillas Arvus, and this morning the shiur is being sponsored by Eva and Arturo Stern in memory of Chana Reisel, Bas Chaim, Yosef Yehoshua, Aleha Shalom. May the learning this morning have an aliyah for our neshama, the Chavik Gadol Rav Sacks.
Before beginning the theme of Tefillas Arvus, which instituted by Yaakov Avinu, as the Gemara tells us in Brachos, I wanted to discuss briefly the conflict of Yaakov and Esav and see how that relates to the Takana of Tefillah. At the very beginning, right, of this past Shabbos of Parsha, you find the Mechiras HaBechorah, the fact that Esav sold the Bechorah to Yaakov Avinu. And the ability and the willingness of Yaakov to do so no doubt poses certain questions la'alocha, and even in terms of hashkafa as well. You know that the Rambam writes in Parchav Beis of Hilchos Mechira, we assume la'alocha that ein adam makne davar shelo bali olam, that if a person does not possess something, if something does not yet exist, so how is it that a person can be makdish or mafgir or makne that particular object? If something is mine, I can sell it to you. If something does not yet exist, how is it possible to envision a sense of mechira? How is it possible to be makne davar shelo bali olam? And wasn't this true when it comes to the bechor? The bechor represented a certain sense of pishnayim, that ultimately a bechor would receive additional share. It meant ultimately a certain schus in Eretz Yisrael, perhaps a schus of avodin beis hamikdash, and yet all of those were pending, they were not real at that particular time. How is it that one can envision such a mechira? This question is raised in the Tshuva Sarivash, in Tshuva Shinchaches, and the Rivash writes that this is a further example of differences between Kodem Matan Torah as opposed to La'achar Matan Torah. That La'achar Matan Torah, certainly it is true that you cannot go ahead and create a kinyan selling that potential right of Bechora, but yet things were somewhat different Kodem Matan Torah, and hence Yaakov and Esav. The Rivash does quote in that Shuva the Chiddush of the Rosh, where the Rosh maintains that there is an exception. There is a time that we assume that Adam Makna Dover Shalom Bali Olam, interestingly, and that is Al Yidei Shua. If a person makes a simple kinyan, then you cannot go ahead and acquire or give or transfer something that does not yet exist. But if a person will make a shvua, an oath in that context, then Mahalacha, that kinyan is considered to be Chal. If that is true, quite medioc in the parsha, he shavali vayishavalo, that a shvu was in fact rendered, that would solve, according to the Rosh, the question of adam makna davar shelo bali olam. The question, of course, is the following, that why is it that a shvu should make any difference at all in terms of the allowance of this particular kinyan? The answer seems to be as follows. Why is it that we assume that principle of the Gemara of ein adam makna davar shelo bali olam? Perhaps one could argue simply as follows, that every kinyan has to be chal on a davar shebe'en, a davar sheish bo mamish. A kinyan can only take hold on something which is concrete, something which is tangible. If it's something that I own, so therefore I can go ahead and sell it to you and you can acquire that particular chayfetz. If something does not yet exist, so therefore there is nothing on which the kinyan can take hold. But perhaps one could argue somewhat differently, because in fact this is what Rabbi Natam writes, and this is indeed the sheet of the Rush as well. The Rush is quote in Sheet of Kovetzus and Balabasra Kufman Beis, that why is it that in an amakna dover shabayolam, very simply, it lacks a level of Gemiras Das, meaning whenever a person is makne a particular object, it's necessary that he has the proper mindset that he is giving up this object. If it's something that I possess, and therefore I am surrendering it or I am selling it to you, in such a case that obviously has appropriate awareness and das makne. If, however, it is something that really I don't own, it's a davar shel bali olam, it's something that has not yet come to fruition, then the Rosh writes, the chisaron, what is lacking in davar shel bali olam, is that level of awareness of gemiras das that is necessary for kinyan. If that is true, you understand the zeal of the Rosh very well that if it's al yedei shvua, and a person goes ahead and takes an oath regarding that sale, then how can one argue this is something that was not meant seriously? There wasn't the proper mindset. It lacked the necessary das. After all, if there was a shvua min haTorah that was created in that context, the Rosh writes, then adam makna davar shavali olam. If that is true, you understand very well. Yishavali vayishavala. Why, in fact, a shvua was made in terms of that sense of bechora. A further point is as follows, that we generally assume when it comes to kinyanim, in it a makna davar shavali olam, but there is a chiddush that the Ravid writes. The Ravid is found in Tmin Dayim and Simen Kuf Samach, that there's an exception. There is a kinyan that can apply even regarding a davar shelo bali olam, and that is a kinyan chalipin. You know, normally speaking, a kinyan means that somehow we transfer the object and you take possession of that particular chafetz. That's true, for example, when it comes to a hagbah, when it comes to a meshicha. In such a take, I take hold of the object, and now it is considered to be a formal hachnasa l'rishus. Now it enters my domain. Chalipin is a very unusual kinyan, because after all, chalipin is quite universal. Chalipin applies to karka, it applies to metalflin, it applies to a hischaivus, I can obligate myself through a kinyan chalipin. When it comes to kinyan chalipin, the object is not transferred at all. The object can be thousands of miles away, and yet you could take hold of something else, and as a result, I acquire that particular object. It is very different from other kinyanim. In fact, with that in mind, you understand how the Gemara can have a machlokes. Rav ben Levi, the kli that you use for a kinyan chalipin, is that supposed to be kelev shel kone, or is that kelev shel makne? Whose kli is it? The one who is selling, the one who is buying? Whose kli, in fact, is used? You know, if chalipin was a form of payment, for example, how can you envision that dispute? Isn't it obvious that the one who acquires, he is the one who has to fund. He is the one who has to pay. But you see, chalipin is a different type of kinyan. It's not considered to be a piraon after payment. It's not considered to be a hachnas l'rishus. We term kinyan chalipin as what we call a haknamidas. It is considered to be a manifestation of an agreement of das kone, das makne, and in such a case that is the uniqueness of kinyan chalipin. The Ravid writes an interesting chiddush, that even though normally speaking, in an amatna dover shabali olam, I understand, how can I make a hagbah or a meshicha on something that does not yet exist, or something that I do not own? However, when it comes to a kinyan chalipin, where it's considered to be simply hakna midas, it's a reflection of the seriousness of das kone, das makne. In such a case, that is how the Ravid writes, even on a davar shaloba meolam. It's interesting, if you look, for example, on the Sfarno in the Parsha, the Sfarno writes that that was the kinyan that was used in order to secure the Bechorah. The role of the Nazir Adashim was a form of a kinyan chalipin. That is what was given to Esav and Yaakov as a form of a kinyan chalipin. Secure the rights of the Bechorah. It's fascinating that the Parsha mentions, right, those vehicles, Shvua, kinyan chalipin, because both are necessary, according to the Rishonim, to solve this problem of a davar shaloba leolam. You know, there's another type of kinyan, right, as well, and that is something which is called the situmta. Situmta means the minhag ha-mochrim. In a certain locale, for example, let's assume that a deal is done, and it's signified by a certain act. In certain circles, for example, when you shake hands, that indicates that the deal is done. Malacha, that is considered to be a significant kinyan, a kinyan situmta. When we sell the chametz to the guy, we use many, many different kinyanim. So one of them we use is we shake hands with the guy, indicating the deal is done. The chametz now is considered to be yours, because the halacha recognizes the minhag ha-mochrim, that if that is considered to be the convention, that is the standard practice, that is recognized as being a kinyan as well. Rabbi Rutenberg writes, in earlier times, in the time of Yaakov and Esav and even beyond, what was the situmta? What was the minhag ha-mochrim? How did you consummate a deal? And the Rambam Rittenberg writes, the answer is the following. What we today call a power lunch. You know, you get together, and you break bread, you have a meal, that al-pidin is considered to be a situmta. That is considered to be consummation of the deal. It's interesting that that also is insightful. In terms of Yaakov and Esav, that they sat and they would break bread, in such a case, not only is it kinyan chalipin, but rather kiminag ha-mochrin, that that, in fact, was the manner in which the Bechor was able to switch from one to another. Again, we look in the parasha, there are many other indicators as well. But these aspects, Shavua, in Kini Chalit, and in Situmta, all seem to resolve that issue of how is it possible, in order for a Kinyan to be Chal, on that which as of yet did not come to fruition, that which was the Dover Shlobali Olam. This issue of this being Dover Shlobali Olam is not only significant in terms of Lahalacha, how is a Kinyan possible, but even in terms of Hashkafa as well, you understand then the debate and the different world vision between Yaakov and Esav. You know, Esav was no fool. And if that is the case, you kind of wonder that how is it possible that Esav HaRasha could give up so much, give up Kedushas HaBechor, potentially Pishnayim, Eschus HaVavoda, part of Eretz Yisrael, and receive so relative little, not to receive an Azir Adashim in return? How is that possible? What type of deal is that? And the answer apparently is exactly that point of Dover Shlo Bali Olam. That realize when you're speaking about the Bechor meant that which possessed infinite value, but one thing was clear. In terms of immediacy, in terms of here and now, the Bechor represented very little. It didn't posit any right at this particular moment. You speak, for example, about a Yerusha Pishnayim, you speak about Eretz Yisrael or Avoda, all of these things were pending, something that perhaps would never apply to Yaakov and Esav directly, but rather something that their children, grandchildren, and so on would inherit, but nothing that really presented a concrete right currently. That was Idavar, Shalom Bali Olam. And that, no doubt, was the difference between Yaakov and Esav. Their difference, after all, Esav was the Isho, the Yetzayid, he was the hunter. And Yaakov was the Ishtem, Yoshev, Oholim, he was the Roetzon. And this, I would suggest, is the real difference between the hunter as opposed to that of the shepherd. A shepherd understands a certain sense of vision, a certain sense of destiny. You know, he goes out to his flock day in and day out and performs the same seemingly mundane, boring task every day. They come home every night. What happened today? Well, nothing. They just let animals out, and the animals ate, and they returned. And imagine doing this for years and years and years and years. And what is motivating you? That ultimately, a person can go ahead and reap a certain benefit from, right, that intense amelos. And how different that is than the Ishio de Etzaid. How much time does a hunter spend nurturing or cultivating? Absolutely nothing. He goes out, he'll put himself at risk, no doubt, but satisfied with the immediate kill. In such a case, there's no investment of time other than a certain sense of immediate gratification. That's why the Avos were the Roetz Zone. They understood that that which is most valuable in life, that requires, right, a certain steadiness, a certain intensity of Dvar Yom B'Yomo, and ultimately the Hazorim B'Dima, Verino Yitzaru. The fact that Esav was that Isha Deyatzaid, after all, the Rashbam even writes that you speak about the future to a hunter, you know, the hunter's insurance premium is quite high. Now the Rashbam writes that he's Ololi Taref. He's at risk constantly. He doesn't always think in terms of long-term vision. He's satisfied simply to survive, right, that particular day. And yet the Roetzon is someone who is quite different. That certainly is true of the Ishtam Yoshev Olim. One who is an Amel B'Torah kind of realizes that if a person wants to achieve, it's not effortless. It requires constant work in Amelus, then ultimately one can go ahead and attain. And perhaps that's part of the lesson that the parsha is conveying, that if a person is only going to be concerned with the here and now, if a person's Hashkafas HaChaim is going to be that of the hunter as opposed to the shepherd, so in such a case, ultimately, a person can give up the most valuable things in life, Kedushas HaBechor, Pishnayim, Avoda, Eretz Yisrael, and only receive in return the Nezira Dashim. That difference between Yaakov and Esav, Dovar Shel Bali Olam, it's a challenge lahalacha, but also it's important even in terms of the Hashkafas HaTorah, the fact that the Avos, as Roei Tzon, were able to realize the need for that type of investment. Yaakov was able to secure not only the Bechorah, but even the Brachos as well. And the Brachos played a pivotal role. After all, the Gemara writes in Sanhedrin Daf Nun Tes, Bris Milah, a mitzvah that was given to Avram Avinu and also Lizaracha Acharecha, to the Zera Avram. So the Gemara writes the following, that look, if Zera Avram is obligated in Bris Milah, so if that is the case, Bnei Yishmael Lechaivo, so Bnei Yishmael also should be obligated in Bris Milah. The Gemara says no. Ki v'Yitzchak, Yikar l'chozara, Yitzchak is considered to be the Zera Avram, but that is not true when it comes to Yishmael. Yishmael is not considered to be the Zera Avram. It's an important difference. After all, when we speak about ultimate Zera, ki v'Yitzchak, Yikar l'chozara. When we speak about Yishmael, Yishmael beno, Yishmael is a ben Avram, but the real Zera Avram, that is Yitzchak. And Yaakov, Tosus writes in Yevamos, in the Chav Beis, an important chiddush that there are two differences between Ben as opposed to Zera. See, Tosus is bothered. When it comes to the mitzvah of Yibum, the Pasuk says that the person dies and Uben Ema, he lacks a Ben. When it comes, for example, to another halacha, in Parshas Emor, when it comes to Achilas Truma, a woman is a Bas Kohen, she is allowed to eat Truma. If she marries a Yisrael, she can no longer eat Truma. If her husband, for example, should die, and Vizera Ema, and she has no children, in such a case she reverts back to Beis Avi, and now she continues eating Truma. So Tosfos points out, based on those Gemaras, that when it comes to Yibum, the Torah says Ben Ema. When it comes to Truma, the Pasuk says Zera Ema. So Tosfos questions, what exactly are the differences between the word Ben as opposed to Zera? And Tosfos writes two differences. Tosfos writes as follows. Ben means a child, it means a single generation. Single generation. You will not refer to grandchildren as being a Ben. Ben is a child. And therefore, the Gemara raises this issue. That's the Sugya of Amos, now Chav Beis. Let's assume a person dies, and he doesn't have children, but he has grandchildren. Would there be a mitzvah of Yibum? Because the Pasuk says, Uben Ema, so he doesn't have a Ben, but he has a grandchild. Would there be Yibum? Would there not be Yibum? The Gemara says there's no Yibum even in that case, but you require a different drasha to teach us that that's true. A ribui is necessary, because the starting point is Ben means a single generation. That's not true of Zera. Zera means something which is enduring, something which is perpetual, a seed that generates, and that is something that spans the generations. You don't require a pasuk to include a grandchild if the Torah uses the term Zera. So therefore, in that particular case, let's assume, for example, that woman, right? She lost her husband. She does not have children, but she has grandchildren. She certainly cannot eat Truma, because the pasuk says Zera Ema, and grandchildren are referred to as Zera. That al-chiddush of b'nei banim harim kibanim, that grandchildren like children, is based on the word Zera. When the Torah uses the word Zera, it means something that in fact is enduring. That's one critical difference, Tosfos writes. Ben, single generation, right? Zera spans the generations. A second difference, Tosfos writes as follows. What happens if it's a Ben who is posel? Let's assume, for example, a child is not kosher, a child is a mamzer. Tosfos writes the following chiddush, the opposite is true. A posel, a child who is a mamzer, is called a ben, but it is not called a zera. That is Tosfos' chiddush. And therefore, let's assume, for example, a person has a son who is a mamzer, there certainly is no yibum, because the posel says ben ema. Ben means whether it's a ben kosher, ben is whether it is posel. However, if the Torah uses Zera literally as a seed, it means a seed that perpetuates, that there's a sense of continuity. And therefore, if the child is a ben posel, in such a case, al pidin, that is not considered to be called Zera. And therefore, the Gemara requires a posel to tell us that a woman cannot eat Truma if she has, right, a Zera who is posel. Because if the Torah uses the word Zera, the starting point is those two differences between ben as opposed to Zeres, the fasting instead of Tosus Nivamos, Nachopeis, just simply in terms of the meaning of these terms, two differences on a Din D'Oraisa between the term Ben as opposed to Zeres. It fits in so beautifully. Kivi Yitzchak Yikar L'Chozar. Who is considered to be the Zera Avram? That's what the Gemara writes. Yitzchak as opposed to Yishmael. Yishmael have the status of a Ben Avram, but not as a full Zera Avram. And then the Gemara raises the following question. Good. So Bnei Yishmael are exempt from the mitzvah of Bris Milah. What about Bnei Esav? Are they obligated in Bris Milah? So here the Gemara says the following, a further drasha. Ki b'yitzchak yikar l'chazara. What is the prefix? B'yitzchak. The Gemara says ki b'yitzchak below ko yitzchak. Just as when it comes to Avraham Avinu, that some yes, some no. Yitzchak yes, Yishmael no. The same is true when it comes to Yitzchak. He will have two children. One will be called Zera and the other will not. Ki b'yitzchak below ko yitzchak. And therefore Zera Avram is only Bnei Yaakov, and not Bnei Esav. And therefore, that's what the Gemara writes explicitly. If the mitzvah Bris Milah is only the Zaracha Acharecha, so therefore, Bnei Yaakov or Chayven Bris Milah, but it's not true when it comes to Bnei Esav. If you look in the Rambam, Terekidefokos Malachim, the Rambam cites this Gemara, the Gemara Sanhedrin of Mendes, the Rambam writes the following, when it comes to Bris Milah, only Bnei Yitzchak or Chayven Bris Milah, not Yishmael. Why is that true? Kiv Yitzchak Yikar L'Chazara. And then the Rambam writes, and only Bnei Yaakov are obligated Bris Milah, not Bnei Yisrael. How do you know that that's true? What did the Gemara say? B'Yitzchak Plokol Yitzchak? The Rambam writes something different. The Rambam writes, how do we know Bnei Yaakov? The Rambam writes, V'Yit to know is Birchas Avram. Because at the very end of the Parsha, the brachos were given to Yaakovinu. Whoever would receive the bracha, he was the one who was termed the Zera Avram. So it's interesting. The Gemara writes, Kiv Yitzchak, Velo Ko Yitzchak. The Rambam writes, the bracha was the determining factor. What apparently was bothering the Rambam is as follows. When the Pasuk says Yitzchak, that's clear. It's Yitzchak and not Yishmael. But when the Pasuk says Be Yitzchak, what do you see from that? All you see is that part yes, part no. But the Pasuk doesn't indicate who. Who is the one who is the Zera Avram? In other words, the Yitzchak is already told that you are going to have children, one of which will be the Zera Avram, the other which will not. But you know what? Where do you see that it was Yaakov as opposed to Esav? That, the Rambam writes, was determined by the bracha. Whoever would receive the bracha, that was the Birchas Avram, he would be called the Zera Avram. In other words, what was at stake in receiving the brachos was not merely the Bechor and Pishnayim and the like, but rather, who would be the one who is called Zera Avram? Who would receive Eretz Yisrael? Who would be the one who would be part of Armasora? That was determined by the bracha. That's what the Rambam writes in Perek Yud. No doubt, it begs the question that what was the mindset, what was the thinking of Yitzchak Avinu? Now you get the impression that Yitzchak was willing to give the bracha to Esav, and without intervention, right, Esav would have been the Zera Avram as opposed to Yaakov. It's hard to imagine. See, if this bracha was just simply one element of, maybe one could recognize that Yitzchak felt that was appropriate. When you see the Rambam, what was at stake in receiving the brachos was so much the destiny of Knesset Yisrael, the Zera Avram. Hard to imagine the willingness to go ahead and to bestow this bracha on Esav as opposed to Yaakov. And the answer, as the Beis Levi points out, really is as follows. But Lachor is Mefurish in the Rambam. When you look in that Rambam, the Rambam writes, the bracha would determine who was the Zera Avram. Which bracha? Which bracha? The Rambam does not write the early bracha in the Parsha. The Rambam writes the bracha that would determine that factor was the Birchas Avram. Where is the Birchas Avram found in the Parsha? In the very end of the Parsha, in Perek Chavches, that last bracha, that would determine. That apparently, right, is the key. Well, Yitzchak knew very well that Yaakovin would be the one who receives that Birchas Avram. He would be the Zera Avram. You know what's striking? Here Yitzchak is giving a bracha to his son. he thinks that it's Esav. And what bracha does he give? Tal Hashamayim Umishmani Ha'aretz. That was not the bracha that Yitzchak received from his father. Tal Hashamayim Umishmani Ha'aretz sounds like, you know, you can have the car and the house and the boat. You know, that's not the bracha. The bracha is the end of the parsha. That's the bracha of Eretz Megurecha. That's the Birchas Avram. Hosikach Ishev Noskanan. Don't intermarry. Maintain a lineage Ayichis. That's our heritage. That's the bracha. This is a bracha of Tal Hashamayim Umishmani Ha'aretz. It's unusual that that was the first bracha to come out of the mouth of Yitzchak. And the answer is as follows. Yitzchak's thinking was that, you know, I have two children, Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov is going to receive the Berachas Avraham. He's the one who will bear the destiny of Knesset Yisrael. But you know, I have a son who is the Yodei Atzayid, that he's very proficient in these more worldly matters, and therefore at least let him have that bracha of Tal HaShamayim Umishmani Ha'aretz. Why can't one split off that bracha of Tal HaShamayim with the Berachas Avraham, and therefore allow each to have his niche, each to have his share? Is it so crucial that the one who receives the Berachas Avraham also must receive the Tal HaShamayim Umishmani Ha'aretz? That was the thinking of Yitzchak Avinu. Never chas v'shalom to surrender the Berachas Avraham to Esav, but to give him a measure of bracha of Tal HaShamayim Umishmani Ha'aretz. That's so meduyik then in the Rambam. The Rambam writes, it is the last bracha that clearly Yitzchak knew he was bestowing on Yaakov that would determine the status of Zera Avraham. That was never up for grabs. The only issue was the earlier bracha of Tal HaShamayim Umishmani Ha'aretz. And that was the intervention of Rivka. That was the insistence that no, that we, even in terms of Hashkafa, do not believe in that dichotomy, that one can split off the Tal HaShamayim from the Berachas Avraham. That no, our mission is to be makdish, the Tal HaShamayim, the Mishmani Ha'aretz, that only the one who receives that ultimate bracha, they can receive that bracha as well, of the Gashmius of Tal HaShamayim Umishmani Ha'aretz, and therefore Yaakov received both brachos. But even in Havamina, even the original thinking of Yitzchak was never to go ahead and to bestow that bracha on Esav. And therefore, that is why that bracha, the Rambam writes, was an indicator of who is considered to be the Zer Avram. There's a fascinating Rambam. It's found in an unusual place, the Pirush Mishnayis in Nedarim and Daf Lamed Aleph. There the Mishnah tells us the following. A person makes a neder that he is Mudr Hana, he will not benefit from Zera Avram. So the Mishnah tells us very simply, he cannot benefit from Jews, but he is allowed to benefit from non-Jews because Jews, Bnei Yaakov, we are the Zera Avram. The Ummah Salam are not called Zera Avram. So a person who is Mudr Hana, so that is the meaning of his neder. The Rambam elaborates, how do you know that this is true? That Bnei Yaakov were considered to be the Zer Avram. So the Rambam writes a fascinating raya. Avram Avinu was told in the Bris Ben Asarim that Ki Ger Yeh Zarecha Be'eretz Lo Lahem V'Avod Avinu Sabam Yoshana. Avram Avinu was told, you know, it's going to be difficult. Your Zera is going to wander from place to place. Right? They're going to travel. They're not going to secure any real Nachla. They will undergo the Shibra Mitzrayim. Ultimately, they will inherit Eretz Yisrael. And the Rambam writes very simply, and who suffered? And who was persecuted? Who traveled from place to place? Who suffered the Shibra Mitzrayim? The Rambam writes it was Yaakov Abanov. It was not Esau. It was not Yishmael. You know, you look in the very end of Parshas Vayisara, the end of Parshas Vayishlach. The Torah tells us at such great length, every area and every territory that the Bnei Yishmael and Bnei Esav were able to settle into conquering. You kind of wonder, like, why is all of this necessary? Why do I have to know every single Chatzereihem, B'tirosam, every area that they were able to settle? So good, if you're drawing a map, it's kind of important to realize, but in terms of Musar HaSgel, where the Torah is not going to waste a single letter, why so much telling us every city conquered by Yishmael and Esav? And the answer is as follows. Because with every successful conquest of Yaakov and Esav, that is a Rayim Uchachas, that is an absolute indicator that they are not b'zera Avram. That's the answer. Ki ger yezer chaber zolaim. If they were the zera Avram, how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to Avram, your zera is going to wander from place to place and be persecuted and suffer, only ultimately settling in Eretz Yisrael? That wasn't true of Bnei Yishmael. That wasn't true of Bnei Esav. They settled with ease. They conquered so much territory. The answer is, all of this indicates that they are not the Zera Avram. And if the Zaracha Nasati Asaretz Azos, if Eretz Yisrael is given to the Zera Avram, every conquest demonstrates that Eretz Yisrael is ours and it's not theirs. That was part of the Zera Avram. That's the Chiddush HaTosfos. So Zera is Zera Kashin. Zera is not Zera Pasal. That's the difference between, right, Zera as opposed to Ben, and that was determined by the Bracha. So that instance of the Dover Shlobali Olam, that's insightful in terms of Kinyanim. It's insightful in terms of kind of a worldview, and that is the uniqueness of Yaakov. The uniqueness of Yaakovinu, recognition in terms of with a breadth of vision, a sense of destiny, that even in times of persecution, even in times of suffering, but no one realizes with an ultimate sense of destiny and vision, that that is the plight, that is the destiny of the Zera Avram. You know, it's not coincidental, and this perhaps will tie in with Tfilas Arvis, that Yaakovinu was the one who was Koveya Tfilas Arvis. Now, Yaakov Avinu experienced Nevuah even at night. So generally speaking, when it comes to the Avos, it was always in the broad sense of day that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would communicate with him. As Shafakwa points out, uniquely true, when it comes to Yaakov Avinu, that Yaakov Avinu was able to experience Nevuah Balayla. HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to Yaakov in Maros Halayla. Right? What exactly does that mean? That even in times of Laila, even in times of Choshech, even in the sense of Cheshkas HaGalos, one can experience Hashras HaShchina. And that, no doubt, was the life of Yaakovinu. Unlike Yitzchak, Yaakovinu experienced like the pangs of Golos, a sense of Shibud, but nonetheless was Zochet to Nevuah even Balayla as well. And therefore Yaakovinu is that model. It's not coincidental that Yaakovinu was Koveya Tfilas Arvis. After all, Tfilas Arvis is the Tfila Balayla, the Tfila Bachoshech. Yaakovinu was one who experienced Nevuah, Hashras HaShchina Balayla. How fitting that he should be the one to be Koveya Tfilas Arvis. That tells us that even Becheshkas HaGolos, that lesson of Shchinta Begalusa, right, and therefore one can experience Hashras HaShchina even in that setting as well. It's not a Tfilah Kavua. Tfilah, obviously, assume, as we'll discuss, is something which is only Rishus. Maybe that's an indicator of the nature, right, of Tfilah Sarvis, because after all, that plight of the Choshech and Golos is not a permanent condition. That is a temporary reality, and therefore Arvis is markedly different from cases of Shachris as opposed to that of Mincha. It's interesting, that link of Yaakovinu and Tfilas Arvis Rishus. See, as you know, the Gemara debates whether Tfilas Arvis is Rishus, whether Tfilas Arvis is considered to be Chova. That's a sugi in Brachos and Daf Chof Zayin. I mean, we'll maintain Chova. We pass as Rabbi Yeshua, Tfilas Arvis is Rishus. The Gemara never tells us explicitly why that should be so. Why is Marit different from Shachris as opposed to that of Mincha? Rashi writes the Chiddush. This Rashi is not found in Brachos. This Rashi is found in Shabbos and Daf Tesamadei. Rashi writes as follows, that, you know, if you look in the earlier Daf, Brachos Kavav, you find that two different possibilities as to the source of Tfilah. Whether Tfilah is based on Avos, whether tefillah is connected to Tmidim Tiknim, whether it's based on Karbanos. Is it based on Tamid Shal Shachar, Tamid Shal Ben Arbayim, Shachris Mincha, and then Eivar Mupidarim, fats or limbs that were offered at night, that is Tfilas Arvis? Or do we assume that no, it's based on Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov? So Rashi writes a fascinating link, which is not found explicit in the Gemara at all, that why should you assume Tfilas Arvis is Rishus? Because tefillah is connected to karbanos. When it comes to karbanos, isn't it obvious that there's clearly such a difference between Shachris Mincha, as opposed to Maariv. Shachris and Mincha, there's a set Karban Kavu which is offered in the morning and the afternoon. At night, you don't have Hakrava Sarkabanos Balayla. You do have, right, a Varmu Padarim, limbs that were not offered during the day continue and burn during the night. But there is clearly such an essential difference between Yom versus Laila when it comes to Avoda. So therefore there's a difference in Shachris Mincha as opposed to Maariv. So Rashi makes that link. It's interesting. See, Tfilas Arvis, Chov and Rishus, Brachos Chav Zayin is Machlokes Tanaim. On the earlier Daf, Brachos Chavav, Machlokes Amoraim, what the basis of Tfilah is. But Rashi writes that these two elements are linked. The Netziv points out in Shulto Ches, that this cannot be according to Rav Chaim Gaon. Because Rav Chaim Gaon writes that the basis of Shachris, Mincha, and Maariv is Avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And yet at the same time Rav Chaim Gaon assumes Tfilah Sarvis is Rishus. So somehow even within Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, one has to somehow distinguish between the Tfilah of Yaakov as opposed to Shachris and Mincha. Well, how do you do that? No, if it's based on Karbanos, you understand very well. If it's based on Avos, why give priority to the Tfilah of Avram Yitzchak as opposed to that of Yaakov Inus? One could suggest various possibilities. But it's Tziv quotes the Sugya Nechulin of Tzani Aleph, where it seems to establish and attribute the Tfilah of Yaakov to circumstance. The Pasuk says, V'yivka b'makom v'yalen sham, but Yaakov Inus found himself in a certain place. What does that mean? When Yaakov reached Charan, all of a sudden he realized, Efshar she'avarta malkam shispala vosai v'nil hispala alti. But wait a second, I traveled through an area where my father and my Zayda davened. How is it that I didn't engage in tefillah? Then it's Tziv writes, it seems as though that the tefillah of Yaakov was because of a certain condition, a certain circumstance, not necessarily categorical. If it was because of a certain circumstance, then Tfilah Sarvis is Rishus. It was not necessarily that which was done both in Kavua. We've discussed in the past the view of the Ramban, that even if you assume that Tfilah each and every day is only Darabanan, but there is an exception, Tfilah which is Be'es Sarah. Be'es Sarah, Tfilah is Daraisa. For Yaakov, he knew no doubt this was an Esara. Yaakov was finding himself outside of Eretz Yisrael, running away from Esav. Esav aficha bisnachim lacha lahargecha. No, in such a case, that was a dire Esara. Perhaps the tefillah of Yaakov, cannot be used as a daily motto when it's clear that this was a unique Esara. And Esara is not necessarily a pattern, a model for tefillah each and every day. Or perhaps, as we just described, and that is that the tefillah of Arvis, which is Balayla b'cheskas hagolus, that is not a tefillah kavua. That by its very essence, that is a temporary tefillah. That is not the ultimate destiny. That is not the vision of Knesset Yisrael. And therefore, the tefillah b'or haboker, b'tzaharayim, that is considered to be the tefillah kavua. That is considered to be a chovah. But yet tefillah Arvis, that remains, right, a rishus, right, the tefillah of golus, the tefillah choshech, that is not considered to be that which is a permanent condition. The Rambam writes that even though we assume that Tfilah Sarvis technically, Mikar Hadin, is considered to be a Rishus, but yet that is quite different for us. The Rambam cites the Rif, the Gaonim, and that is that Shavu Alei Kachova, that we already have accepted upon ourselves Arvis as a Tfilah Kavua. The Rambam writes, Kfar Nogu Ko Yisrael. The implication of the Rambam is, Shavua Kachova does not mean that I individually have decided to daven each and every day, but rather no. Right? All of Knesset Yisrael routinely, right, davens Maariv, and therefore, Bnei Yisrael as a tzibur has accepted upon themselves Tfilas Arvis as a Tfilas Kova. So the Rambam writes, even though it's true that in terms of its source, historically, there is a difference between Maariv as opposed to Shachris and Mincha. But yet for us, for Anogul Kol Yisrael, we treat Maariv as a Tfilah Shchovah, similar in many respects to Shachris and Mincha. That being said, you still find differences lahalacha between Maariv as opposed to Shachris and Mincha. The Rambam writes several differences in different contexts. The Rambam is bothered by the following, that the practice already in the time of the Gemara of davening Maariv early. when he shows the daven ma'ariv early in the Gemara. The Gemara tells us in Brachos Nechav Zayin that Rav Tzali Shal Shabbos Be'er Shabbos, that on Erev Shabbos Rav used to daven ma'ariv early on Friday night. How is that possible? Rashi writes that's because of the vehicle, the mitzvah of Tosefes. They accepted upon themselves Shabbos, therefore they would daven ma'ariv. But the Rambam writes very differently. The Rambam writes in Perek Gimel Hilchos Tefillah that that is a function of Tefillas Arvos Rishus. The Rambam writes Tefillas Arvos Rishus, and therefore ein midaktik in bismana, the allowance to daven ma'ariv earlier, even before Tzeis HaKochavim, that is based on this assumption that Tefillas Arvos is considered to be a rishus. It's a twofold chiddush in the Rambam. Number one, this difference, allowance to daven early is based on Tefillas Arvos rishus, but chiddush number two is that's relevant today. Because the Rambam said that Kfar Nogu Kol Yisrael, we already treat Marav as a Tefillas Kolva. So maybe you would have expected the Rambam to say, you know, there was a time where you could daven early, but we who treat Marav as a Chovah, that's no longer true. The Rambam writes, no. In other words, that even though we treat Marav as a Tefillas Chovah, but nonetheless, Marav remains distinct. There's still many differences between Shachris and Mincha as opposed to Marav. So one, right, that Rambam writes is the allowance to daven early. The Rambam writes another difference in Perek Tesef Hilchos Tefillah, and that is Chazaras Hashatz. Chazaras Hashatz is only applicable, the Rambam writes, when it comes to a Tefillas Keva, not when it comes to a Tefillas Harishus. And therefore there's no Chazaras Hashatz when it comes to Tefillas Arvos. And that obviously is true even today. Even though Kfar Nogu Kol Yisrael, but nonetheless, it remains inherently a Tefillas Harishus. Rav Chaim explains as follows. Let's assume, for example, a person makes a neder that each day he is going to bring a carbon adava, an olas adava. When he offers that carbon, it's still a carbon adava. It's not a carbon chova. Aye, he has to do so. This is a classic difference from Chaim writes between gavra versus chevtza. Chevtza, inherently, the carbon remains a carbon adava. Aye, you took upon yourself to do so. That's true. There's a chovas hagavra each and every day to offer a carbon adava. But the character of the carbon remains a carbon adava. It is not a carbon chova. Similarly, Tefillas Arvos intrinsically is considered to be a Tefillas Rishus. Nagu Kol Yisrael, we have taken upon ourselves each day to daven a Tefillas Nedava. That's what we do when it comes to Ma'ariv. But the nature of the Tefillah remains a Tefillas Nedava, as opposed to Shachris Mincha, which is considered to be a Tefillas Kolva. And that is how the Rambam envisions, right, many differences between the two Tefillos. Right? It's a fascinating issue. Right? Many, many possible differences, lahalacha, that you find. Ostarichik once explained, based on the Tosfos and Brachos and Daf Dalid, that Kaddish can play different roles. Sometimes you can have a Kaddish HaMashko, and that before, for example, a Shmoneh Esrei, you always begin with a Kaddish. Kaddish introduces. Right? We're not to Ephraim Reis, but it's very important that the Chazan say the Piyut of Hineni. But you can't say Hineni after the Kaddish before Shmoneh Esrei, because the rule of the Kaddish is to introduce the Shmoneh Esrei, so Hineni has to be before the Kaddish, because you don't have a hefsek in between the Kaddish and the Shmoneh Esrei itself. It's a Kaddish HaMashkil. And sometimes you have a Kaddish HaMisayim. The Kaddish concludes, right? The Kaddish Shalem. After Shmoneh Esrei, Tis Kabbal Tzlosom. Right? That's part of the Kabbalah's Tzima. Part of the Kabbalah's Tzima. That's why, for example, if you lose your minion, let's say in the middle of Chazaras Hashatz, you can still say the Kaddish, because you had the minion for the Chazaras Hashatz, and the Kaddish is simply a conclusion of that. It's not the beginning of a new unit at all. And then there's a concept Tosfos points out of a Kaddish HaMatzik. Sometimes you have a Kaddish that indicates transition. Indicates transition, no? And what is the purpose of that Kaddish? Tosfos writes an interesting Kiddush. Let's assume, for example, it's a fast day. Mincha, you have to lay in the Haftarah. In such a case, you have three aliyahs. Right? And then afterwards, you say Kaddish. Let's assume it's a Shabbos or Yantif. You have a Haftarah. All of a sudden, you read your aliyahs, then you have Kaddish, and then you have Maftir. No, when it comes to, let's say, a tiny sibur, the Kaddish is after Shlishi. When it comes to, right, the Kaddish in Shmoneh Esrei, it's before the Aliyah that the Ola will get from after, no? Why exactly is the difference? Tosfos writes as follows. When it comes, for example, to a tiny sibur, you're not about Tepo Sapos. You can't add to the Aliyahs. And therefore, Shlishi is one of the necessary Aliyahs. That's part of the Chovas Sayom, to have three Aliyos. And therefore the Kaddish has to follow that particular unit. What we do, our minig, this was not the minig of all the Rishonim, but you know what our minig is? In essence, we have a Hosafa. We have a Hosafa every Shabbos. We have a Hosafa every Yom Tov. You know what the Hosafa is called? Maftin. It's not Olam in a minyan. How many Aliyos do you have to have on Shabbos? The Mishnah says seven. How many Aliyos on Yom Tov? Five. We have an extra Aliyah. We have five plus, we have seven plus. The answer is Mafti really is not Olam in a minyan. In other words, the secret is, it's Hosafa. When they tell you, our shul doesn't have Hosafa, we really do have Hosafa, it's Mafti. Right, really is Hosafa. Otherwise, we do what we do on a tiny seymour. No? So in other words, the first five aliyahs, that indicates that that's the Chovas Hayom. And what's going to follow on a Yom Tov, that's really a Hosafa. The first seven years of the Chovas Hayom, what's going to follow is only a Hosafa, Ein Min HaMinyan. How do you demonstrate transition? Know that what we've done up until now is part of the Chovas Hayom, and what we're about to do is only Midin Hosafa. That is the role of a Kaddish HaMafsik. Right? The Kaddish indicates a shift. Whatever we did up until now, that's part of the Shiva Chamisha Kruim. What we're about to do now really is only a Hosafa, and the Kaddish serves as somewhat of a barrier. Somewhat of a barrier. Tosos writes in Brachos and Daf Dalid that, you know, when it comes to Shachris, we don't have a Kaddish in between Kriya Shema and Shemoneh Esrei. The Kaddish is before, and seamlessly Kriya Shema into Shemoneh Esrei. In Mariv, somewhat unusual, when it comes to Mariv, we finish Kriya Shema, Birchos Kriya Shema, Kaddish, right, and then Shemoneh Esrei. Why do you have a Kaddish in between Kriya Shema and Shemoneh Esrei in Mariv, and you don't have that when it comes to Shacharis? You know what Tosfos writes? Tosfos writes because Tfilas Arvis is Rishus. So the simple way of understanding the Tosfos is simply to say, you know, the Tfilas Arvis is Rishus. So therefore, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a little bit of an interruption. Now the answer is much more profound. It doesn't simply mean that. It means as follows, that Tfilas Arvis Shemoneh Esrei is Rishus, but Kriya Shema. Kriya Shema is Rishus. Kriya Shema is a mitzvah daraisa. A mitzvah daraisa. You have fulfilled a mitzvah daraisa, and now you're transitioning to a chiyuv tefillah, which is only a rishus. Isn't that a beautiful parallel to your five or seven aliyahs and your maftir, which is an olam in a minyan, that is only considered to be a rishus? How do you demonstrate that sense of transition? The answer is Kaddish. That's why, not just simply Tfilas Arvis is a rishus, so there's nothing wrong with having a conversation. There's nothing wrong with interrupting with Kaddish. The need for a Kaddish HaMafsik, when you transition from a chova to a rishus, Shachris, Shemoneh Esrei is a chova, Tfilah is a chova. Then there's no Kaddish. The Kaddish has to be before, because that's seamlessly. You can go from a Kriya Shema to a Shemoneh Esrei. I'm not sure when it comes to Tfilas Arvis. That's a further difference. We'll have to discuss the many differences between Tfilas Arvis, Chova, and Rishus. But one that usually is not always realized is that Kiddush of the Kaddish. The Kaddish plays three different roles. Kaddish HaMashkel, Kaddish HaMesayim, but a Kaddish HaMafsik. But sometimes you can have a Kaddish that signals, right, a transition. This is true when it comes to our Kriya Satora and Shabbos and Yom Tov and Nisbah Torah. There's a Kiddush HaTosos, the need for a Kaddish when it comes to Mariv in between Kriya Shema and Shemoneh Esrei. Right.